Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Indie Football Podcast, the World Cup Daily Edition from Russia. I am Ed Mallion. It is 4:12 a.m. in Moscow. The sun is not coming up, really. It's come up. A sort of pinkish glow on the horizon, blending into sky blue as you go up. And I'm all alone, very much alone, having just got back from Brazil 2, Serbia 0 at Spartak Stadium. I can talk to you a bit more about that in a bit. That puts Brazil top of Group E, which puts them on collision course with Germany. Only it doesn't, because Germany this afternoon fell 2-0 to South Korea. And in the other game, Sweden beat the Mexicans. Korea scoring those two goals very late on. It's a misleading scoreline because the Germans dominated that game. But then they couldn't quite get the score. I think Mesut Ozil created 7 chances on his own, which is more than any other player has in any game this tournament. But it wasn't enough because they couldn't finish. It's been a problem for them throughout this competition, and they got picked off by the penalty, and then on the counter-attack where Manuel Neuer is literally in the middle of the park and Son makes it 2-0. So Germany are out, but you don't want to hear me just monologuing about that. You'd much rather, I'm sure, hear from Jatpit Brook and Miguel Delaney, who are in Kaliningrad. They will talk to you about England, which by the time you listen to this will be today, tonight, I guess. But first, they'll give a little bit of Germany chat. What does this mean for Germany and for the tournament? And a little bit of England, and then I'll be back to round things off.
Hi, Ed. Hi, listeners. This is take 2. On take 1, I just said we're in Nizhny Novgorod. We're not. We're in Kaliningrad. I'm here with Chief Football Writer Miguel Delaney. Say hello, Miguel.
Hello.
We have just been to the Gareth Southgate and Eric Dyer press conferences ahead of England-Belgium tomorrow night. We've also been enjoying the action from the other games so far today. I don't know if you've covered this elsewhere on the pod, but we're going to cover it here anyway. There's only one place to start: Germany. Miguel, what did you think of Germany's defeat today?
Only one place to start, because it's the end of their World Cup. They're gone for the first time since 1938, and at the first stage. Kind of completely justified to be, and it's quite a weird thing in the sense that, you know, you could say maybe in the long run it's worse for the competition that a side like that is out, but is it? I mean, they're like, this was a really bad German team. But beyond anything, I think what's quite worrying for Germany is that, say, when previous champions have gone out, like Spain 2014, Italy 2010, France 2002, it was very obviously the end of a cycle, and they knew what they had to do to change things. With Germany, it's not. I mean, I was looking through the profile of the squad. There's only 3 players that are over the age of 29, and they're Neuer, Khedira, and Mario Gomez, and none of them are over 32. So, like, that's a squad in its prime. Also, they haven't actually won that much. It's not like they should be completely sated by it. They've had one World Cup in this decade of producing player after player after player. So there's an argument for real underperformance over the long term, not just this World Cup. But this World Cup, they've looked as laboured and as leggy, and just there was nothing to them.
It's funny, isn't it? Because Joachim Löw has actually been there since 2004, when he started working with Jürgen Klinsmann. I know they've just given him the new contract, but after 14 years working with the players, do you wonder if now might be the time for another pair of eyes and a different coaching staff?
You might, yeah. I mean, to be honest, I've always had doubt over how good a coach Love actually is. I mean, the thing about, like, Germany, because of the immense wealth in their football structure, they basically industrialised youth production and talent coaching to a level that pretty much no one else can. Not even Spain. England are probably the only country that can match them, and they're finally doing it. And, like, that critical mass of talent almost meant that Lowe didn't really have to kind of be a manager, and this is of course in an international football world where the quality of management is lesser and lesser, so it means you would wonder how much he actually had to do. Was it more one of these kind of facilitating talent roles? And it was always hard to see or say what his actual hallmark in that team was. And now this tournament involved really big decisions for the first time, and he kind of fluffed them all. So like there's a few strands there.
Yeah, I've just been having a Twitter argument with people on Twitter about Leroy Sané, because there was a lot of when Sané wasn't picked, lots of people were surprised about this because he's brilliant. Mm. But there's also a bit of a strain on Twitter of Lowe was right not to pick Sané because he never plays that well for Germany. And you know, how can you watch those three games in which Germany scored only two goals and
looked slow
and not think that they would be improved by having Sané in the team? I mean, it feels like such an obvious, I mean, maybe I'm missing something in the detail, but to me it seems like such an obvious mistake and a chance to refresh a player who wasn't really involved in the previous successes. Yeah. Like, that's what they need, is they need someone, you know, outside of that kind of Ozil, Royce, Müller, yeah. I mean, Gomez. Obviously they've got Werner, but I think Sané is a different player and I think more dangerous than Werner.
Yeah, and I mean, there was all this, especially amid all this talk now of whether this group has been together too long. And surely then something different. I mean, and that was one of the rationale, wasn't it? That they thought Sané upset the vibe or the feel of the group or whatever. Well, maybe on the evidence of what we've seen, maybe that's what they needed.
Yeah, completely. What do you think the implications of Germany going out are for the rest of the tournament?
Well, I just saw from Love's press conference that he wouldn't confirm whether he'd be there for the European Championships. So that's probably the biggest. In terms of the tournament, sorry. Not actually that much, because I think everyone was expecting them to basically be in a last 16 game with Brazil. So it felt like the most major implication had already happened. And so ultimately, one of the heavyweights was going to be gone. Now it's possible two could go after the last 16, but still, Brazil should do enough. So in terms of that, it doesn't take away too much. I suppose it does make that side of the draw less congested as well. But ultimately, if it was going to be between them or Brazil, one of the heavyweights would have fallen, and just they've gone earlier.
So we're recording this at half time in the Brazil game. They're currently 1-0 up after a great goal by Paulinho. They might collapse in the second half, and then we'll all look very stupid when you listen back to this. But I think we're looking at Brazil winning that group, and you'd have to say, look, they'd now be favourites to reach the semi-finals.
Yeah, completely, especially that side of the draw. That side of the draw is with France and Argentina. Sorry, we've had very little sleep over the past few days.
Yeah. This is the bit that you can turn down the volume. England is why we're here in Kaliningrad, because tomorrow night they play Belgium, and it's one of those games which, you know, when the draw is made, you look at that one and say, "Oh, Thursday night, England Belgium," clear the decks for that one. But in reality, like, I think the closer we get to the game, the more the kind of less serious it feels. Like, the kind of competitive tension's been deflating out of it all week like a balloon.
Well, there's like the classic segue for Brazil on that side of the draw, basically, because it actually further spins this match around, because it's now obvious that like, if you want to go far in this tournament, it's much better to finish second. Like, if England finish second in this group, they're likely to play the winner of Switzerland and Sweden. Once they get through, what you have to say, I mean, not to knock the quality of Colombia, Senegal or Japan, but it's better than playing one of the historical heavyweights, given the psychological significance for England that alone. So I mean, it's as optimistic a path to the semi-final as you could hope for.
Yeah, we had earlier Roberto Martinez used the word celebration about this game. He said, like, it's going to be a celebration of all these great Premier League players who know each other, which is, I mean, it makes it sound like a testimonial or a charity shield, which is amazing. But it's, when you've got the manager saying that and not even pretending that they're going to try and win. We run a sweepstake here amongst journalists. I went for 3-2 to England. Okay. I think England will win. But it's not going to be like a proper game. It's going to feel like more like a third and fourth place playoff, which is odd. I mean, in a sense, it's a reward for how well England have done. But I don't think, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I don't think England will be able to, like, successfully pull off trying not to win in a way which Belgium will be able to do. The only really interesting topic for England then is like the individual players themselves. Miguel has just kind of dismantled the railings outside the media centre here.
It was already broken.
Yeah, he has managed to put it back on, but I wonder if you're going to get your accreditation suspended for that. You know, I think we're expecting Southgate to make a few changes. It'll be interesting to see how Vardy plays, if he plays, or Rashford, or Danny Rose coming in, or Eric Dyer, who gave the press conference here this evening. Because, you know, those guys are all in with a shout if they do well of playing in the last 16, especially Rose, who I think was always really Southgate's plan at left wing back, but it's been young for the first two games because ultimately Rose wasn't quite as fit as he hoped when he joined up. Is there anyone you're looking forward to seeing play, Miguel?
I'm actually quite fascinated by Kane's what is now going to be quite a relentless pursuit of this golden boot, and against it maybe a second string German or Belgian defence, he's a chance to maybe hit six, which has been pretty much the standard World Cup golden boot number since 1978.
Do you think this year, I mean, given how well Kane, Lukaku and Ronaldo are playing, it could be what the first time anyone gets to double figures for a long
is it? It was Gerard Muller, 1970, I think. I think got 10. Yeah, it could be. Although I think Ronaldo and Portugal are going to go out to Uruguay. And I think Lukaku
isn't as good as Kane.
Yeah, and isn't. And like, I mean, Belgium or Panama, Tunisia. It kind of.
They all count.
they do all count. Yeah. But you probably don't get to count as many against better sides. Yeah.
That's the insight that you get when you tune in to the Indy Football World Cup Daily Podcast.
What do you make of Kaliningrad?
It's nice. It's very pretty. It kind of feels more German for obvious reasons. Like, it looks, you know, you've got these kind of, it's a bit like a Hansel and Gretel style houses. Along the river, there's actually more visible England fans than I've been in Nizhny Novgorod and Volgograd, where there were hardly any England fans, to be honest. Whereas here, there seem to be quite a few. I mean, I know there's a lot who are, you know, like flying to Gdansk and then taking the train or driving across. So I think we'll see lots of England fans out tonight and then tomorrow in the daytime, and then hopefully we'll see a really good atmosphere at the game. Because, I mean, you know, obviously you can't criticise people who pay a lot of money, but it's very noticeable to me, certainly as an English person at the first World Cup I've ever been at. I mean, there are literally, you know, you go to an England game and there's 2,000 or 3,000 England fans, and you go to, I mean, last night I was at Argentina and Nigeria, there must be 50,000 Argentina fans there.
Yeah.
It's the same with Brazil, Costa Rica, St. Petersburg. And I mean, England have got slightly unlucky with their kind of slightly boring opponents and like unglamorous cities they've been in so far.
Yeah.
But it has, I mean, you can't, okay. I mean, I don't mean this like in a moral judgment way, but it's unavoidable how few England fans there have been compared to other countries. And Southgate's often asked about this, and he always gives the answer, which is, first of all, I want to say thank you very much to the guys who have come. Men and women who've come. You've been really, really positive and supportive and well-behaved and everything. But you kind of, I mean, you can't pretend that it's not happening.
Yeah. And it maybe sums up something else about the World Cup that it's still, in very kind of base terms, means so much more to South and Central America, all of the Americas in that way, that it's kind of their massive big event. They come over in huge numbers, pretty much every single Latin American country involved. And as well as that, maybe does it reflect something else, that some of the I think it's undeniable that the setting of Russia has put off a lot of Europeans, given the political situation, everything else, whether that hasn't quite had the same influence in South America.
Yeah, I mean, that's one for one of our South American experts to weigh in on.
Do we have Tim Vickery? how much is Tim charge?
Tim, if you're listening, give us a call. Other listeners, thank you very much for listening to us, and we will be back in your ears on first thing Friday morning with our thoughts from England 3 Belgium 2 live from Kaliningrad. Bye.
Thank you, guys. As you probably as you probably understood from that, not overwhelmed with the prospect of England-Belgium, which is starting to feel like a very weird game indeed. If you haven't seen the full draw yet, then allow me to explain why. On one half of the draw, we have France versus Argentina and Uruguay versus Portugal. Now we have confirmed Brazil versus Mexico after Mexico managed to come second in their group thanks to those late career goals. And Brazil, as we say, with a 2-0 win over Serbia, confirmed their place. So if you find yourself on that side of the draw, then the winner of the round of 16 game featuring England or Belgium and then one of the Group H teams would play the winner of Brazil-Mexico. The winner of France-Argentina would play the winner of Uruguay-Portugal. And then the winner of those two play each other, and then the winner of those two goes to the final. Whereas on the other half of the draw, Spain versus Russia, Croatia versus Denmark, Sweden versus Switzerland, and then Belgium or England playing one of the Group H teams. So, you know, you can't take anything for granted in the World Cup, but it is clear that both sides would prefer the easier draw. Although Belgium, it does feel like, have been a bit more obvious about it. A little discussion of Brazil, I guess, just because I was there tonight. I think they have what we've been saying. They have the look of a World Cup contender. I think me and Miguel discussed this the other night, that this isn't a team that are going to mow smaller teams 6-0, 7-0, but they are a team that are going to be really tough to beat. They're built to go toe-to-toe with these European superpowers, and they've not met one yet. They met a middling European side in Serbia, and Serbia tried to exploit certain holes in that team, but Brazil were too good, and fundamentally Coutinho and Neymar, whenever they had the ball, looked like they could make something happen. They created both of the goals, one each, and they could have created many more. They are exceptionally talented playmakers, and I think, you know, it's like when we discussed Belgium the other day, Miguel and I on here. Having De Bruyne and Hazard in your team, two elite playmakers of that quality, is a real difference maker. And having Coutinho and Neymar in your team is just the same. And if they play like they play tonight and the rest of the team is solid, then they are absolutely in the mix. Although, as we discussed, they do have a slightly more difficult route. They're probably going to play, you know, most likely, according to the odds anyway, England or Belgium in a quarterfinal. Then they have to play France, Argentina, Uruguay or Portugal in a semi. So they will come up against those teams that they've been built to play. And fundamentally, that is the only way that we can test how good this Brazil team is under Chiche. Germany's elimination, as the guys discussed earlier on, was a surprise. But now the more info that comes out of the camp, the arguments between Jogi Löw and his bosses, who couldn't even agree on a training base, the selection issues, the arrogance. I mean, he did use the word arrogance, and I did feel that after their first game against Mexico, they were still, you could say, fully confident they were going to go through. But what we've seen since, and then what Löw admitted to today, is there was an arrogance. They felt that they didn't play very well in the pre-tournament friendlies, but that they could just turn up to the World Cup and it would fix itself. And fundamentally, they didn't fix anything, and Germany were out. And that's been celebrated around the world. The Brazilians at Spartak Stadium went mad when they saw it. The wounds from the 7-1 may have healed, but the scars are still very much there. And Argentina, who have been knocked out by the Germans, I think, at the last three World Cups in a row, were also delighted. For some perspective, Argentina have not been knocked out of a World Cup by any of the teams left in this World Cup since 1966, when England eliminated them in that famous game with Ratin being sent off. So it's wide open. We've lost some good teams. We lost some good teams at the qualifying stage. No Italy, no Netherlands, for example. We've lost another good team already in Germany. And some people feel that means it's shaping up for football to come home. I couldn't possibly comment on that, but we will know more about that tomorrow night when we talk England-Belgium. On this podcast, well, I'll have Jack and I'll have Johnny and I'll have Miguel all calling in, and we'll know exactly what the picture is for the round of 16. Until then, take care.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.